Hi, everybody. Let's get it started. I don't know everybody's name, so why don't we just do a real quick thing going around? And I met Jerry, I met Rob and a couple others, but if you could give me your name and I'll give you mine. I'm Dave. Start over here.
Casey.
Casey? Okay.
I'm Allie.
Allie.
Andrew,
of course.
Denise.
And Denise.
I'm
Beth.
Katie.
Sarah.
Lindsay.
Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Jerry.
Bob. Rob.
John.
I'm very young. I'm a
chaperone.
She's just a
little girl. Oh, I see. You might pick up something tonight. Who knows? It's okay for you to learn. I sure am pleased that you're all here and that you've all chosen this. I don't know if I was your age whether I would choose to do something like this or not. And so I think you're to be commended just to say that you're going. And some of you, this is not your first trip, so that's good. I didn't actually personally come to Christ until I was 24 years old. And we have some drums in the background. Yeah. And so at 24 years old, I finally found out what life was really about. And it took me a while to get a missionary call. And how do you get a missionary call? One of the ways is to go on a short-term trip, to be quite honest. For me, it was being in the military and being stationed on a foreign field in Okinawa, Japan, and working with Christians in Action missionaries there. And a number of people in Christians in Action today came through that calling. You work on the bar street and the coffee shop. You get out in the villages doing evangelism enough, and you say, man, what am I in the military for? What good is that? I want to reach people for Christ. And the missionary call is very easy and understandable at that point. Christians in Action, however, started before that. I met Christians in Action in 1971 when I was a young guy there in the military on Okinawa. Maybe not so young. I was approaching 30. Is 30 old or young to you guys? I don't know. 30 is young, okay. And then 1957 is when Christians in Action actually began, and we began as a soul-winning kind of an organization, sent out missionaries overseas, sent out missionaries around Long Beach, California, and Southern California, where we were located, to do soul-winning, door-to-door evangelism. And that was the introduction to Christians in Action. Then that developed into church planting, because you get a bunch of believers and you have to do something with them, right? And so just slowly the organization began to grow and develop from simply personal evangelism, sort of a parachurch, to actually a church planting organization. And so by the time 1971 came around and I was in Okinawa, Japan, there were several churches there, some Japanese and some servicemen, some English-speaking international kind of churches that we found really good fellowship with. But we weren't really doing short-term in those days. It wasn't until the 80s or the early 90s that short-term really began to go, at least within Christians in Action. And so even though we have a 50-year history of the organization, we've been doing short-term about half that time. Bob Spencer is our Latin America director, and he's hosted many, many short-term teams in Brazil, where he was a missionary for years. I'm Dave Canold, and I'm serving as the president of Christians in Action, and have been for the last 6 years. Before that, my wife and I, after we finished our missionary training, we went to South Korea and then also served in Japan some before coming back and working at the headquarters. Our headquarters is in Woodlake, California. Do you know where Woodlake is? Yeah, it's a huge metropolis. I'm really surprised you don't know. I think it's clear over 6,000 population now, nestled up against the foothills south and east from here. And we're looking to move our headquarters into Fresno and be a little closer to you all, and won't have to drive quite so far to get here. So personally, I've been on short-term trips. In Korea, we received short-term teams, and so we've had some experience, and we just want to share from that kind of a base. What do you think the purpose of short-term, when you think of it and you've been talking about it and so forth, what are some of the purposes of short-term? Just
fulfilling our current needs.
Fulfilling our current needs on the field kind of thing? Yeah, trying to bolster whatever's needed there. Okay. Yeah, providing a little man hours that they don't have, maybe. Any other purposes that you have experienced or think of?
Experience a different culture.
Okay, yeah. I've listed that under a broader title that I call AA, attitude adjustment. You know, when you get to a foreign field and you folks that have gone, you know how all of a sudden the things that used to be important to you here in the States seem so trivial because you see people living at a total different survival level. and along with that, probably, and maybe in the same category, is discipleship and growth. I think you, if you've been on short term, you know that it's a growing experience, and you're going to come back having experienced that other culture, but also having something in your life that's a little more solid, a little more than what you had experienced before. we had mentioned the helping on the field. Hi, your name?
AP.
Or Anthony. Hi, Anthony. Hi, AP. Welcome aboard. I'm Dave, by the way. I'm just kind of doing an introduction and maybe a little bit on fundraising because that's so important. One of the things that you had mentioned was helping out on the field, and that's good because you're probably going to be going down to Guatemala, and a lot of what you're going to do is outreach. Touching people that need to know about Christ and doing witnessing or doing something that might be an attractive way to gain a relationship and win someone to the Lord. And you may have to use an interpreter if you don't speak Spanish. How many here speak Spanish? We got 2, 3, 4 a little bit. 5 not at all. And then the rest. So, well, that's good because you want to hang out with those guys. Speak some Spanish because you can really get help. And the team down there will also, the missionary team will provide some translation as well. why are you working with Christians in Action? Maybe you have a question. What's the benefit? Is there any benefit? What's the purpose? One of the good things about working with a missionary agency is the fact that they have existing ministries on the field. So when you go down to Guatemala, you'll be working with missionaries, with national pastors, with churches. What is it, 13, 14 churches that they have throughout the country there. Some are in the lowlands where it's really hot and muggy. Some are in Guatemala City where it's eternal spring. And some are up higher in the mountains where it can get pretty chilly at night. So they have just about everything there in Guatemala in terms of climate. But you work with these ministries. And so any work that you do and accomplish while you're there gets transferred into the hands of either a national or a missionary that they can do the follow-up. And so you're not just going in and sort of loving and leaving, but you're loving, and then there's those who can carry on. And I think that's important. Loving and leaving is okay. A lot of mission agencies do that kind of thing, and God honors it. because he's the one that's in charge of this, and if somebody hears the gospel, God is going to make sure that they grow or they have some input in their lives. But it's so much better if they can have follow-up, isn't it? Automatic field follow-up is already in place. Additional training and preparation. We're here tonight to try to help you a little bit. Maybe you think, well, this stuff's old hat or something. But it never hurts to review, and it never hurts to have another perspective and something that we can give. There's a certain synergy that you have by networking together, where you have the church and the mission agency and then the mission field, and you're partnering together. they say that, if a man, it takes a man, let's say, 48 hours of hard work to build a shed, how many hours does it take two men to build a shed? You say it ought to be 24 hours, right? But they can probably finish it sooner unless they talk and gab and drink too much coffee. But the idea is if you have a horse pulling a sled, how many pounds can he pull? And then you put two horses there, it's surprising how much more two horses can pull. It's more than twice the amount. And there's a synergy as we work together and we bring different perspectives. We bring different ideas, and then we bring our work together so that we can help each other be more effective. There's one other item that I put down on my list that's very important, and that is when things go wrong, it's nice to have a mission agency to sort of back you up. We've had situations where we've worked with churches, and they already know how to do short-term, and they want to work on one of our fields, and sometimes we don't even know, and they're just sending a team down, and then all of a sudden we find out there's a big problem. And that could have been diverted so easily, and things could have run so much more smoothly if we'd all been working together from the beginning. And it just happened recently in West Africa. We had a team there, and half of them got stranded when they were trying to leave for various reasons, and it's a kind of a funny story when you hear about it afterwards, but it's not funny when you're in the middle of this thing in the heart of Africa trying to get out, and not knowing who to trust and what's happening, and it was a bit fearful. Fundraising. You guys have already sent out your letters, Andrew says. Have you got that going? That's good. Have you thought of everybody that you want to send your letter to? What about classmates? Have you sent your letter to some of your classmates or your classmates' families? What about your parents' friends? You say, well, I've been out of the home for 10 years. Hey, your parents' friends know who Johnny is, if you're Johnny. And so don't pass up that opportunity. Get a hold of your parents' mailing list and look through there, and you say, oh, well, I know these people. Get that letter out to them, because unless you know they're pagans or something.
Their money's good.
Yeah, well, their money's good. That's right. Billy Sunday, he was a preacher before Billy Graham. At any rate, Billy Sunday was a great evangelist, and somebody asked him that. He said, well, do you take money from unbelievers? Surely you don't. He said, sure I do. He said, the devil's had it long enough, It's time that he got back to to the Lord's work. What about your Christmas card list? Do you have one? What about your parents' Christmas card list? Church friends, have you looked through the directory to make sure that you picked up all your friends and all your acquaintances from church? Do you ever think about sending a letter to one of the teachers that you had in high school? Or, I don't know, you had a good relationship with them? Why not? How about old friends that have moved away, but you kind of still, you're still in touch a little bit? What about friends at your job? What about friends at the old job that you used to work at? What about friends in your neighborhood or people on your sports team, that you're on a community sports team? You got all those bases covered? You want to add a few names to your list? It's not too late. You can. You've thought of all of those, right?
Even email now.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's nice to have something go in the mail, though. And Bob and I were talking about it earlier today because it's nice for them to have something in their hands, tangible, and have a response card of some kind that they could hand to you at church or send back to you in the mail so that you know they're on board with you, or that they can send to the church, however you're doing it, if they send it directly into the church and then the church gives you the response card. And the response card just needs to have on it, you know, hey, Johnny or Sue or Billy or whatever your name is, I want to help you. And I'm excited about you going to Guatemala, and here's what I want to do. And then you give them some options to give a gift or to pray for you. And if they want to pray for you, then you need to give them prayer list and prayer requests. And then, or maybe they want to say, you know, I have a friend in Guatemala. Could you take an extra bag? Say, no. No extra bag. Or there'd be other things maybe you'd want to put on there. I can't give now, but I'll give later after my paycheck comes at the end of the month. And then if they hand that to you, you've got something. Be sure your letters tell about your ministry plans and some of your own personal goals on the trip. And then follow up, you know, with those personal goals later on when you send a letter out later on. give your support team updates. And if you're doing it by email, how much easier, you know, if you can get both address and email. Even the training, you know, you get, you might learn something tonight, who knows, and you might get excited about it. And if you do, you want to get that out and put it in a letter and say, I'm learning a lot, we're getting prepared, and who knows, they might want to give you another gift. Be specific in your letter about what you need, how much money you have to raise, and how much you can say. Like, for instance, you know my personality, and I don't have many friends, so I'm only sending out 10 letters. And so you have to give a whole tenth of what I need. Or hopefully your letter wouldn't say that, but you understand the point. I need to raise $2,000, or I need to raise $6,000. Don't be afraid to mention the amount, and I need...
It's not
$6,000. It's not $6,000. And I need so many people to give this amount, or so many people to give that. You've probably gone through those strategies, but I just wanted to remind you. Then... Andrew is saying that within 2 or 3 weeks, you're hoping to have your 50% in already. How many are nearing the 50% level now? Woo, glory! That's half the team. The only problem is those five may have to support the rest of you. No, it doesn't work that way. Everybody's got to pull their own weight, right? So if you're approaching the halfway mark, or you're over the halfway mark now, that's really good. But you may find in 2 or 3 weeks that you haven't had too much response. It's not easy, but get on the phone and start calling, or make a personal visit. And I tell them what you're doing, and did you get my letter? And, you know, I really want to go, and I can't go unless I raise all the funds. And you know that I'm not independently wealthy, so you need to help me out here, folks. And just talk. You don't want to talk to them exactly like that. You want to go in and tell them what you're doing and what you're planning, and then say, if you're bold, then you say, I'm really thinking that you could give $50 toward my support, and just say it. And then after you say it, of course, you don't say it until later on when they're all excited about what you're going to do, right? And then what do you do after you say, I'm praying that God would lead you to give $50. Would you do that? What do you do then? You sit there and you sweat. No, you just sit there and you let them think about it for a little while and let them sweat. Really, it's that because they want to help you, but they're battling in their minds, what should they do and how should they do it? And so I know that if you are able, you can do it that way. Other people, they find that they have the Midas touch, and all they have to do is mention they're going on a trip, and the money just comes in from everywhere. So don't be afraid to make a phone call. And even if you don't ask or you're afraid to ask, make the phone call, make the personal visit. That relationship, build that relationship, and let them know more and more what you're doing. And who knows, they may ask, well, how are you doing on your raising your funds? Well, I'm glad you asked. And then you can give them a little more special. When you write your letters, I suggest that you not start with a big Bible verse at the top, because sometimes people, they say, well, I've read the Bible once, I don't need to read it again, you know, and they put it aside. Put a Bible verse. You want to make sure you're biblical and you want that in there, but you want your people to read the letter. And the way they're going to read it is if there's something interesting right at the beginning, and if you're using sort of personal stories and interesting anecdotes about your preparation and so forth. If you're a little bit apprehensive about going to a foreign country, it's okay to share that a little bit. But say, I'm determined to go, but I'm really kind of scared. And I met somebody from Guatemala the other day, and oh my goodness, they were funny looking. Or I don't know what you don't want to say something that's bad, but you want to say something that's interesting. You know what I'm saying? To let these people know. Well, Jesus had a support team. He had people that gave to him. So you can have a support team to provide for you and for your ministry. Paul raised funds for the mission work. Churches gave to Paul, and he thanked them. And in the letters that we have in the Bible, you can read where he was thanking them as he was writing back. Paul also worked to make money. Your guys are going to work. Are you going to prepare the food for the dinner? Yeah. Actually, and do any of you know how to cook very well? I hope so. and so you're selling the meals. How much are you going to sell them for?
$40.
$40. $40 for one meal. And it feeds four, so it's $10 a shot, so to speak. That's great. And so then you don't have to slice it, right? They have to slice it. Great. And so doing that kind of a thing, or a car wash. I was surprised. Some kids did a car wash just one afternoon, and they raised $400 for the Christmas camp in Sierra Leone. I was totally blown away by that. And, you know, they didn't know what they were doing. You guys know what you're doing. The Apostle John actually instructed Christians to give to missionaries. Read that in 3 John. Since we didn't open in prayer, let me close my little session in prayer, and then Bob, I'll turn it over to Bob Spencer, and we'll go from there. Father, we thank you that you have already identified those on the support team for each one of these people here. And so we ask, Lord, that you would help them be identified and help them to be recognized, and for then the funds to come in, for them to be prepared in every way, not just financially, but deep down in their hearts and in their minds and physically as well, that they'll be able to accomplish all that you've called them to do. And if there's more training to be done, that, Lord, you'd bring it to all to our minds to get them to tip-top condition for ministry in Guatemala. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Well, my name is Bob, and I'll be going with you to Guatemala. And I do speak Spanish, and I'm very happy to see that some of you do as well. We had three guys in the back that speak Spanish. Now, do you know how to find the bathroom, or do you know something more beyond that? You're pretty fluent in Spanish?
I dabble.
Oh, you dabble. Okay, you're intermediate. Conversational Spanish. Well, that's great, because when you get back, you're going to be a lot more than you have right now. You're going to have a lot more. It's probably, when I went to Brazil in 75, I knew a few words, and within a week, I had learned more than I'd learned on my own 6 months of studying by myself. It's just a crash course. It's so wonderful to have people all around you that are always helping you to learn new phrases and new words. And of course, everything we say, you know, we don't just use our words. We use most of the things that we do say, we say with our heart, don't we? And you'll be doing a lot of heart conversations. How many of you have you been on a short-term trip? Raise your hand, please. Hey, almost all, everybody. Well, that's great. Where'd you go? Start with you on the back. Where have you been? What countries? Okay, wow, 7 months. Oh, you're the soccer player?
Yeah.
Oh, good, good. We need you. Yeah. Okay.
Romania and South Africa.
And what do you do? You play soccer?
No, quiet.
Okay, we'll talk about what you guys do later on. Okay, next one.
I've never been on a mission.
Never been, okay.
Romania.
And where'd you learn Spanish? Good.
So
okay.
I can work ag Spanish all day long. I can't tell you.
Hey, ag Spanish works. Ag Spanish works. Okay. Next one.
I went to Mexico.
Mexico. Okay. And you? Not been? No? Andrew, I know you've been all over the place.
Yeah. Thailand, Romania, and Costa Rica.
And Denise has been with you on all those? No? Where have you been?
Costa Rica and Mexico.
Okay. And? Great. Okay. Okay.
Mexico and New Orleans.
Okay. You notice a number of you have been to Latin America and Mexico, especially Mexico, and that's wonderful. Mexico is a wonderful field, but most of our short-term people do go to Mexico, and it's because of the it's local. It's easier to get there, and there's a lot of reasons why. But it is a wonderful mission field. And as a result, most of our missionaries go back to Mexico. So what does that tell you about short-term? Short-term is very important in your calling. Like Dave said, he was in Okinawa. I was in Okinawa. We saw people doing it, and we said, hey, we love this. Lord, let me do this. And that's the way it was. So your trip is going to be very, very important in the call that God has for you. And I don't know what that's going to be. I don't know if it's going to be to a mission field someday as a missionary, or some of the many, many things in between that. And every one of them is just as important as the other one. And so we just believe that the experience of going to a mission field is part of a process. And that's what the whole study is on the next mile. Now, you all have one of these books, right? Or the smaller one, okay? And Andrew has the leader's guide and the CD and all that. That's great. So the basis of the next mile is that we want to help you have a short-term trip with a long-term impact. And the way to do that is to prepare. And I know that Andrew and Denise are doing a lot of things with you guys. And I don't want to try and repeat anything that they've done. So if I start getting into something that you've already done, say, well, we've already been there. Okay, move on. Because we only have three times together, and it's going to be really fast. But the idea of the next mile is to know what to expect somewhat and to prepare yourself for it. If you know where you're going, then you know how to prepare yourself a little bit. And especially in the area of mentoring, we're going to ask that everyone here identify somebody that you respect and that you look up to. And they don't have to be a spiritual giant, but they do have to be a spiritual person. And someone you know is going to be able to pray for you, and who takes it seriously, that they will pray for you, and that they'll be available to you. And, you know, the church leadership, they have a lot of things going, and they'll, I'm sure that they're going to try and get with each one of you. I know that Andrew and Denise are going to be really involved with you personally. But if you can have somebody that is identified as your mentor, and that term kind of scares people a little bit, but if you can explain to them, I just want you to pray for me, and I just want you to be there for me, so when I get back, we can talk about the things that I've been through. I need to bounce some things off of you, and I need to hear what the Lord tells you for me. That is so valuable. And Gordon is going to be sharing a lot more tonight and next week about mentoring and about discipleship. This is part of a process. The whole trip is just part of a process. We don't believe in drive-by experiences on short term. It's not an end in itself. It's part of a process of you becoming a disciple and following Jesus for the plan in your life. And believe it or not, and I know you do, it's going to be a very important part of the puzzle, sometimes it looks like, the puzzle of your life that God is putting together. I did give you all one of these tracks. This is in English, 5 Steps to Life, and 5 Pasos Hacia la Mejor Vida, and that is in Spanish, of course. And if I want all of you to look at it in English and try to get a little familiar with it, I'm not going to insist that you use our type of evangelism. This is a track that everybody in Okinawa is, or not Okinawa, in Guatemala is pretty much familiar with. And so you will be able to, if you know how to handle this track, it'll be easier for you to evangelize some folks. And maybe you can learn some of the questions, and maybe you can even learn some of those questions in Spanish. I don't know, but the main thing is that you be familiar with some kind of evangelism. If you're using the 4 spiritual laws, that's great. If you're using Romans Road, that's fine. Whatever you're comfortable with. But we've got the five-point plan, or 5 steps to life, as something that we're familiar with, and we'll be happy to go over that with you next week more in detail. Now, we do appreciate very much what you're doing with the group, and we know that your church has a lot of experience in short term, and we want to build on that as much as we can. And but I want you all to know that Andrew is your team leader. I'm not your team leader. Andrew's your team leader, and I'm your ministry leader. I'll just use that term. Miguel Toledo is our Central American director. He's Guatemalan. He is going to be our field leader. And so when you need something, guess who you go to? You go to Andrew and Denise, however you guys divide that up. But he's the go-to guy. When he needs something, he doesn't go to Miguel. He goes to me. And then when I need something for Andrew or for Miguel, I'm the intermediary there. So that's the way that works. We want to respect the structure there, and everything moves along very, very, very smoothly when we do that. What I want to avoid is that when you come back, there's not this burnout and, hey, what happened? I'm back in the routine of my life, and 3 months later, you forgot you went. We want to avoid that. And believe it or not, that happens a lot. I don't know if you've had similar experiences or if you had the opposite experience. I hope you did. But I have 2 sons. One is 20 and one is 25. When my 25-year-old was 18, he went to New York right after 9/11. And he had a wonderful experience with Calvary Chapel, and they came back. And then he went on another trip, and he went to Europe, had a great experience there, came back. And he said, I want to do what we were doing there. I want to do it here. I want to do the evangelism. But when they came back, something happened and something else happened. And about 2 months later, he said, I'm kind of discouraged with everybody. I'm kind of discouraged with myself. And we don't want that to happen. And so the mentoring process is really going to help you to avoid that. And I know that Andrew and Denise are going to help you to incorporate into your fellowship, into your body life, what you brought back from your mission trip. And I know it doesn't have to burn out. Let's keep the fire going. Amen. I know that if we all agree on that, then we're going to be expecting that and doing the things that that will help that not to happen. One of the things that we're going to be doing is a team covenant. And I just want to write this up here.
Oh, I messed that up, didn't I?
A team covenant is very simple and it's very personal. And this is something that I want you all to be working on. What is a team covenant? Very simple. It's what I commit to and what I would like my teammates to commit to. In Philippians 2:1, I just want to read that. The Bible doesn't talk a whole lot about teams, but it does talk about unity a whole lot. And it says, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from His love, if any fellowship with His Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and one in purpose. And so, if we know what is expected of us, what God is going to expect of us, what we're going to expect of each other, I think we're going to be able to have a more united purpose. And so, I'd like for you all to be thinking about a team covenant. What do you think some of the things would be that God would want us all to commit to as a team? Just questions. How about everybody pray for everybody? One thing, okay. Something else?
Try your best to eat the Guatemalan food.
Oh, that's good food, good food. You don't have to try on that. How about getting along? Hey, by the way, were you able to do anything on conflict management? Or you did?
Yeah, we're going to have that sometime.
Okay. Believe it or not, all Christians need to learn a little more about conflict management when we endeavor to do something as a group. It's funny how things tend to come to a surface when we're together. And when I first went to the mission field, I lived with a missionary family and a single missionary lady and my wife, of course. And we were all in one house. And after about 6 months, we all decided that wasn't the Lord's will. But it was 6 months of tremendous discipleship and washing each other's feet and asking each other to forgive us for all of our misgivings and things. And you just learn a lot. And so be ready to forgive and ready to pray for each other and expect the best and all of those different things. So we're going to be working on the team covenant next week. But I'd like for you to be thinking about that. What do you think is, I mean, just one-liners. What does God want you to do personally in order to make yourself more of a team player with these people that are sitting next to you? And what would you like to see all of us commit to in order to make our mission trip more successful and more useful in God's hands? Okay? You know, a lot of the things that you're going to be going through are not that different from what career missionaries go through, preparing themselves to get to a field, on the field, and returning. Even though it's only going to take, 10, 11 days, it's a missionary experience. You will be missionaries. And right from the onset, when you're writing your newsletters, the attitude, I can't beg anybody for money. Well, I don't think I've ever begged anybody for money because it's a mindset. I'm not begging people for money. I'm allowing them the opportunity to participate in my ministry that God's called me to, and He's called them as senders to help me. And we're, in a sense, we're together, we're going, and we're going to have impact together because they're going to be praying for me, and they're going to be helping me to get there. But it's not me. It's not a vacation. This is a mission that God is sending you on. And so that could be part of our team covenant, knowing that we are on a mission that God is sending us on is really a very important part of the whole attitude. And then when you come back, you're all going to go through some level of reverse cultural shock, and you probably, those of you who have gone and come back, maybe you experienced the idea of when you came back, you said, wow, you know, why isn't the church more alive? How come they're not all excited about things like I am? Don't they realize what's going on in the world? And you tend to be a little more critical of people and of the fellowship and even the leaders. And it's something that happens. Or maybe the pastor only gave us 10 minutes to share what we did. You know, and you think, well, how come they don't think it's more important? And these are attitudes, these are things that missionaries go through who've been out on the field for 5 or 6 years and come back. And you've only been out for 10 days, but you're going to experience that to some level. And so we want to cover some of those attitudes and prepare you for it. And next week we're going to have Alan Hyatt with us. He's on our staff. He spent 25 years in Japan, and he's going to be teaching us about cultural sensitivity. So that's a really important thing to get a hold of and to realize that God's going to deal with you about some of your attitudes that before you get there and help you to communicate better with people without inadvertently talking down to them. When we give our testimony, we're going to talk more about that. I know you guys have said you've done a lot about, you've done something on your testimony. So everybody's like worked on a 3 or 4 minute testimony. By the way, when you use an interpreter, 3 or 4 minutes turns into 7 or 8 minutes. So keep that in mind. But it's important to have some knowledge of the culture when you're giving your testimony. Because some of the things that you might share with a young person here in the United States, you might not share with the Guatemalan. They have a different outlook on life. And it's not that we want to snow people, we just want to identify with people. And there's always something in our experience that we can identify with people better. And so we want to be sensitive to their culture. And Miguel and Linda Toledo are our team leaders in Guatemala. And they're going to be with us on October 30th for the last meeting. And I'm really happy about that because it's not always possible to have your team leader address the team that's going to, the field leader, I should say, to address the team that's going to be visiting. So they're going to be, any question you might have that I can't answer, they can answer. Okay, so if I can't answer something, I'll just say, wait till the 30th. Okay, but Miguel and Linda are tremendous people. They've been on the mission field. When I went down in 75, I stopped in Guatemala and met Miguel. I had known Linda before. They were boyfriend and girlfriend at that time. They got married, and they have a son and a daughter that are they're wonderful leaders, Christian leaders now. And Brianna just finished Bible school, and she's a counselor now, and just tremendous girl. Their son is taking. He's a worship leader, just a tremendous guy, but he's going to be back here in the States, so we're not going to be able to have him with us, unfortunately. But they're going to have a lot to share with us about Guatemala, the culture, and their ministry, their vision. I want you all to catch their vision and to, as much as possible, you know, really be able to become part of that, because we're not taking a vision to Guatemala. We're walking into their vision. We're going to become part of what God is doing and has been doing for 30 years through them. They look so young, you won't believe that they've been on the mission field for 30 years, but they have. I'm going to hold up for right now before we go any further, and I want to introduce Gordon. And we're really privileged to have Gordon with us. He's going to be teaching you some things on discipleship and mentoring, and he has quite a lot of experience in doing this type of ministry. And I know for a fact that he's ministered to many, many men and women of God in Fresno and other places, and he is considered one of the best mentors around. So you are blessed to have Gordon with us.
Here you are, sir. Before I start, let's all stand. You need to take a break a little bit, you know, because you're falling asleep. I don't want you to do that. Stretch a little bit, get a little blood flowing. Oh, okay. All right, good. You can be seated. I think you got the blood flowing? Okay, my name is, as Bob said, Gordon Donahoe. I'm on the team, and I've lived in Fresno for probably longer than most of you have lived on this earth. Came back from Mexico City where I was ministering with my family in 1982. And I had pastored before that, went to Mexico on a special assignment and did a church plant in northern Mexico City, which was at that point about 17 million people. And to the up and outers, what I call the up and outers, to the corporate executives that the U.S. corporations were sending down, or English or Canadian executives or corporations sending down, and to the U.S. embassy people. And so it was a fun time. My son was only in kindergarten when we arrived. My daughter was third grade. And so both of them, my son better, but both of them are fluent in Spanish. In fact, my son probably is more comfortable speaking Spanish than he is English. But especially when he came back, he had to learn how to translate. He kept asking, what is this word in English? Because he learned everything in Spanish at this American school. So, and running around with all the little Mexican kids, he was able to pick up everything. You knew he learned a language because he said one day to his mother, you know, I dreamed in color last night in Spanish. And he had absorbed the whole culture. And that's neat. But what that has done is it has been an advantage. And he married a woman from Mexico after he returned here. And so we have several granddaughters, and they all speak Spanish. And I was telling the ladies over here, one's a freshman at Fresno State. She spent 3 weeks in Mali. Malawi, thank you. South, Central Africa, where it was. There was about 30 went from the local church, and she was one of those. And then my oldest granddaughter is a junior at Fresno Pacific University. And then I have two granddaughters. One's a sophomore at Bullard High. One's a sophomore at Central High. And then my daughter lives in Clovis. She homeschools her kids, so a little variety there. But what a joy it is to serve the Lord and to be part of God's kingdom wherever we go. And I have the privilege of traveling the world almost every year. I'm going somewhere. I go to Indonesia almost every year because we have a large school there and seminary. And then I go over and teach at it, or I be part of their ceremonies. And I had the privilege last year of doing the wedding for the president of the seminary, and he's also president of the Baptist Churches of Indonesia, doing his son's wedding. And that was really an interesting experience. You know, in America, you get two families. They may or may not come together in a wedding. In Indonesia, like a lot of the countries over there in Italy, all the tribe comes together. And the good thing for you ladies, all the families pay for the wedding of the tribe. So the parent doesn't caught with the bill. So it was just a great celebration, and how they interact and how they have to ask for the father of the bride's hand right there the day before the wedding. And it's a great ceremony. I just loved it. I'm very privileged to be part of that I was asked. But we're preparing to go on an adventure. That's what short-term missions, and that's what missions is. It's an adventure with God. Because we're not taking, you're not taking, and on any of us, when we go to a foreign country, we're not taking God to the mission field. We're anywhere in the world, or any city in the world, or even in inner city Fresno, we're not taking God there. God's already there. We have the privilege of joining him in what he's already doing. He's already working in people's lives, if they attend a church or not. He is working in their lives. Bob Pierce, the founder of World Vision and Samaritan's Purse, said, find out what God is doing and join him there. And that's what you're doing. Find out what God's doing and join him there. So we're not taking the American culture. We're not taking God there. We're just joining in what the people in Guatemala or any other country you're going to, what they're already doing, and how we can come along and be partners with them and serve them the best we can. And as serving them, we learn. And our views start to change. Our attitudes start to change. And really, God starts to work on us in amazing ways. And I remember when my granddaughter came back in late July. Well, it was August, I guess, she came back from Africa. And she just glowed. She was sitting there. She just glowed. I couldn't believe. She was so excited about everything, you know, about this mission trip, you know, and all that happened there and stuff. But, you know, as Bob was saying, it can start to fade when all the activities of the world, Fresno, school, get involved. If that's not carried on, it starts to fade. And so that's very important. But so if we're going to Guatemala, if we go to Indonesia, if we go to India, if we go to wherever in the world, we have the joy of joining the adventure and hopefully contributing to what God is already doing. I just can't believe that God wants us to be part of that. That's the adventure. One of the best ways to start an adventure with God is to have somebody walk with you in prayer and encouragement. They're called a mentor. And that's what we're going to talk about a little bit today, a little bit next week. A mentor, somebody who has come alongside and is willing to, in this book that you have, and I don't know, have you already talked about this little handout? Okay, we're going to be talking about this. You're going to be giving this to a mentor.
By the way, don't open it.
Top secret. Mentor's eyes only. So you don't open it up ever. You hand it to a mentor, and they're going to walk with you through the process. So we can do that later, but how that happens. But I just want to talk about some things. When you go on a mission trip, and several of you have been on it, there's three parts to a mission trip, right? Preparation, going, and the life after. And preparation is so important, to be prepared to go. If you're just kind of, I'm going, I just want to hang out, and, you know, hang out with my friends, you're not going to be prepared to get there and to really join in what God is doing there. Secondly, going is the experience of seeing what God's already doing there and you and your team being part of that and saying, wow, see what happens. And when you join God, things are going to happen. You're going to take, I don't care if you use that track or Four Spiritual Laws or just share your testimony, God's going to use you and people are going to come to Jesus. People are going to come to Jesus. Because you are willing to put yourself there and saying, God, I want to join you in what you're doing, and His Spirit will move through you. So you're prepping, you're going, and then the life after. That's follow through. And once you've been to the mission field, hopefully that's true of you who have been there, your life changes. Your attitude changes. You see things different. You worship God differently. You hang out with God through scripture and prayer differently than before you went. It's really a life-changing event if you really, after, allow God to continue to work through you and not let the fire burn out after 2 or 3 weeks or 2 or 3 months, but stay at it. And that's why it's good maybe to go on mission trips regularly and or start working in the inner city regularly like your church does and get involved in people's lives. So that's the three aspects of a short term, really, prep, going, and the life after. Then there is stewardship. We're all stewards of what God has given us. God has given us life. He's given you the privilege of this church, and He's given you the privilege of being part of His process. And so we're stewards of what God has given us. And the growth in discipleship, learning to be more committed follower of Jesus. And that's what Jesus was doing. He was just hanging out with 12 guys who were trying to, and He was helping them be disciples. And that's what they were called, His disciples. And they were learning from Him. They watched Him. They experienced it. They tried it. You know, He sent them out 2 by 2. He sent out the 70. And then they came back and debriefed. We're going to debrief when the trip is all over. So it's growth. The growth in discipleship is becoming more like Jesus, more committed follower of Jesus Christ. The other thing is so that's a part of our stewardship with God. The other thing is our changing worldview. We have been, and I remember when we left Mexico, you know, I guess we had a TV. We did have a little TV, but we never watched, the kids watched Spanish programs or cartoons or something maybe, but, you know, we lived very simple in the house for 4 years. We said, this is the way we want to be when we get back to the States.
And so we tried that. And, you know, and year after year, things just started to, and I have to admit, you know, culture impacts you. Culture impact all around. Well, Susie has that. I got to have that. John has that. I got to have that. You know, but when we change our worldview, we begin to see the world as Jesus sees the world. And not like we as human beings see that. We got to see it as Jesus sees the world. See how he sees the people. You know, for example, people can go to Mexico and they can criticize, man, these people are stupid. They don't know how to drive. They don't know how to, you know, they don't know how to do this. They don't know how to do that. No, that's not true. They just do it differently than we do. Doesn't mean it's wrong. They just do it differently. I almost caused an accident when I first got to Mexico because they have a lot of what they call the circles, the glorietas. They have over, you know, over River Park here. They got a circle and still people don't know what to do. They're going, huh? But in Mexico, the people are wonderful people. But if you don't know them, they won't look at you. And so you enter into a glorieta and their eyes are straight ahead. And if they blink a little bit, that means they've given in. So, you know, I come up to the glorieta. When I first got there, I wasn't used to what it was. And so I stopped. And I always caused a huge pile up because cars just rolled. Everybody knew what to do. And they were moving around that thing fast, too. So culture's different. And so I don't care if you go like I do to Indonesia often or Israel or any other place. Their food may be a little different. The way they do things or the way they see things a little different doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just different. And when they come here, they say the same thing. Well, you guys do all kinds of different things. What's wrong with you people? So, but our worldview will change and hopefully for the positive that we will see through the eyes of Jesus. The third thing of stewardship is ongoing partnership with global believers. There's nothing more exciting, and if you've been on mission trips, there's nothing more exciting than to begin to communicate back to that country with people you've met. They're your new friends. They're believers there, and they're your brothers and sisters. And so now you're building a worldwide network of family, of friends, relationships. And you're stewarding that, and that's important. The other thing I want to look at is our life purpose. And I'm going to turn from Corinthians. In Corinthians, I had it marked here somewhere. Corinthians chapter 9, Corinthians 9:24. Remember that in a race everyone runs, but only one person gets the prize. You also must run in such a way that you will win. All athletes practice strict self-control. They do it to win a prize, and that will fade away, but we do it for the eternal prize. So I run straight to the goal with a purpose in every step. Isn't that great? I run straight for the goal with a purpose in every step. Wow. I'm running from the New Living Translation. I am not like a boxer who misses his punches. I discipline my body like an athlete, training it to do what it should. Otherwise, I fear after preaching to others, I myself might be disqualified. So, run your life with a purpose. Run your life with a purpose. And what does it say here? How are you to run? To win the race. Isn't it important to win? Not to say, well, I'll just come in first, second or third or fourth or fifth. Nobody's satisfied with that. You know, that's all the hype of the Fresno State Bulldogs. I mean, they want to be number one. They want to win everything. And if you're in the soccer team or the basketball team, same thing. So run with to run. Don't run just to run, but run to win. That means you have to be disciplined. That means you have to be in the Word of God. That means you have to do those things that will help you win the race. And run for life. In Colossians chapter 1, verse 28, listen to what it says. 28. So, everywhere we go, we tell everyone about Christ. We warn them and teach them with all the wisdom God has given us, for we want to present them to God, perfect in their relationship to Christ. I work very hard at this, as I depend on Christ's mighty power that works within me. And so, you run for life. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. Life is a marathon. So you pace yourself through life. You know, if you try to sprint and you get all excited, you know, I've seen this, and young people, they get all excited, man, they're doing everything, they're praying, they're reading the Bible, they're studying this, and then they wear out. And if you pace yourself, it's a lifelong marathon, and you're a lifelong learner. I have never stopped learning. And even at my age, which I won't tell you because I'm older, probably three times older than some of you, But it's a lifelong learning process. You never stop learning. You're always learning. So you run to win, you run for life, and you run to finish. In Philippians chapter 1, listen to this. Philippians 1, verses 4, 5, and 6. Philippians 1, 4, 5, and 6. Where is it? I always pray for you and make my request with a heart full of joy, because you have been my partner in spreading the good news of Christ from the time you heard it until now. And I am sure that God, who began a good work within you, will continue his work until it is finally finished on the day when Christ comes back again. So you run to finish the race. My greatest desire is I finish strong. I finish strong. Let me tell you a story about a young man that these guys met. I don't know if any of you met him. His name is Bob Williams. In fact, he's in a rest home right over here. He's going to be 98 years old next month. And Bob got on a boat in Long Beach in 1937 with his family and two little girls, or a little boy and a little girl. And this thing started to pull out of the harbor in Long Beach. And they didn't have any, they were from the Goye Fellowship Sunday School class in Raider Tabernacle in Long Beach area. And they stood at the dock, and everybody, you know, it's 37, that's depression time, just after depression. They took out all the money they had, and they gave them their money. They had, I think it was $27 in their pocket. They got on this boat to sail to the Middle East, the Far East, and thinking they were going to go to Sumatra in Indonesia. And he got out. He couldn't even afford any kind of lodging, so they put him down in the stewage area, way down the bottom, where the Asians would be put to travel. And they said, "You can't go down there. You're Anglo." And they said, "We're going down there. We're going to minister to them all our life. That's where we're going to be, down in the hay and whatever it was down there." And he walked up and stood and grabbed the deck, the railing on that ship as it sailed out. And he said, "Lord, what have I done? What have I done?" The fear struck him in his heart. And $27, a family, and they were on a one-way ticket to the Far East. And God just assured him, "No, I am with you wherever you go." And the reason I tell you that, he stayed there all his life. He stayed there until he was run out by the Japanese during the war. Him and his wife had to lay down the bottom of a canoe, and they were shooting bullets across them. And he sailed out and got out of there and finally got over to the main island of Indonesia on another little boat and sent his family home. But he came back and he ministered there until he came home, and he was like in the 80s. And he went back every year until we had put him in a wheelchair the last two times, and to lift him up the stairs at the seminary because all the sleeping was upstairs. And he said, "I can't do this anymore." And so at 96, that was his last. I think 96 was his last trip. But he prays every day. And you go over there and you hold his hand. You're like holding the hands of Jesus. It is amazing. He's finishing strong. He's going to be 98. And he sits in our board meeting with us. And he wheels up and he prays, and you just like, you're just, oh, wow, that's the way I want to finish. I want to finish strong and serving God. It's amazing to see this guy. And he has, the other day, he's a good friend of Bob Pierce when Bob was there, a Franklin Graham, personal friend of Franklin Graham. And so he sent Franklin, we were talking the other day, a couple months ago now, and he said, I said, you need to send Franklin a letter, and Ronnie, who's the president of Indonesia, should come over and meet, maybe Franklin come to Fresno when he's out in the West Coast. But he couldn't, so we flew Ronnie back there and to meet him and met with him. And they met for about an hour. He brought all those world leaders in that, you know, the vice presidents who go around the world. And they sat in that room, and he heard what Ronnie was saying about the gospel. Because we're planning over there, they're in the process of planting 500 new churches throughout Indonesia. And Franklin Graham walked out of the room, said, excuse me, walked out of the room, came back with a check for $100,000 for the seminary. Said, this is what it's all about. This is what it's all about. Sharing the gospel, planting churches, finishing strong. That's a relationship that, and Bob sits in a rest home over there, but all that transition took place, and he got to talk to Franklin on the phone. And so finish strong. And Bob, when do you want to hand this out? Next week or in a couple weeks?
They already have the books, and in the book is the...
So when do you want them to hand it out?
The book and the mentor's guide to date.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the things we're going to be doing is identifying.
So next week we hand it out, or they hand it
out?
They have it. They hand it, so they can hand it out anytime.
They can hand it out, and that's I want them to identify the their mentor this week, and ideally by the time you come back for class next Thursday, that you will already have identified. If you haven't, don't panic.
So identify a mentor. Okay.
And give them the.
Okay. Good. So, yeah, get this. Pick out your mentor. What is a mentor? A mentor is someone who is willing to walk with you over the next 2, 3, 4 months and pour and listen to you, pray with you, hear what you're saying, keep your fire burning after you get back. We call them encouragers in the Bible. Today's language, they call them life coaches. So it's just somebody pouring into your life and making a difference. Now, I want to just... I'm going to do more next week, but I just want to share with you for a few minutes personal stuff. What is a mentor? Mentor is someone, as I said, pours stuff in your life. My first mentor was my dad. I was raised on a dairy farm in Idaho and then in Northern California. And he taught me two things, because mentors teach you things. Hard work and ethics. Your hand, when you shake your hand, that is as good as gold. Ethics. So hard work. So I remember in junior high, my dad opened up a store to sell milkers and, you know, for cows and all kind of dairy supply stuff. And so my brother and I started to run the whole farm. And in high school, they all moved away and it was me. And so I had to work hard and go to school in high school, but I worked hard. That was ethics. Hard work. The other guy that taught me something, who was a mentor that came into my life for a short period of time, was Jack MacArthur. You ever heard of John MacArthur? This is his dad. When I'm my first pastorate up in Eureka, California, he came and did a crusade there with us, and he kind of took me under his wing as a young rookie. And I went to Eugene, Oregon, where he had his church, and my wife sang. She was a soloist, so she sang there. But he taught me how to study the Word, even though I went to seminary. He taught me how to study the Word and how to preach the Word. And he's amazing. He was an amazing preacher. I remember sitting in his church, and people for 45 minutes would just sit there, and he would just, the Bible would just come alive. And he said, I said, wow. I never got like that, but, you know, I learned a lot. The third guy who was a mentor in my life is a guy called Ted Engstrom. Ted Engstrom was the head of World Vision. And when I was a missionary in Mexico City, I was on a special assignment. You know, I always had a thought in my mind. You can ask anybody anything. All they can say is no, right? You know, we have a lot of fear of asking people stuff because we're afraid they're going to say no. Well, what a big deal if they say no. we go on to the next thing. But I just, I had the joy of picking up the phone one day, and I called World Vision from Mexico City, and I said, I'd love to have Ted Engstrom come down here and teach some of his leadership principles. And the next day, guess what? Ted Engstrom called me. He was in the middle of the United States somewhere, and he says, I'm coming. Not cost you anything. And he came, and we did, to businessmen and women in Mexico City, we held this big leadership conference, and Ted Engstrom. But what he did, and I wish I had this gift, because he was an encourager. When he died 2 years ago, in his funeral, they called him the son of Barnabas, because that's who he was. So I was down at World Vision, because I worked at Love Inc. here, ESA Love Inc., for 9 years. And so we went, because Love Inc. was down there for a while, and so we went down to World Vision. I called and said to his office there and said, Ted, can I come over and see you? He said, well, I got two meetings, but you know what? Come over right now, and I'll see you. So I walked into that room, into his big office. We sit down. I wasn't there 4 minutes, because he had another meeting. But in those 4 minutes, I felt like I was the most important person in the world. And when I walked out, I thought I was there 30 minutes. That's the way he made me feel. I remember he picked up his book and said, here, Gordon, signed his autograph book. Here, take this, man. I know you like the leadership books. But he made you feel important. So hard work, ethics, studying the word, sharing the word, and making people feel important. You know, in our American culture, we think we are number one. But Jesus said, no, others, people, love the other person. They're number one. Another guy I came to know back in 1976 here at Link Care, he just brought his family back from South Africa. And he opened up InterVarsity to all Latin America, especially South America. His name was Dr. Robert Young. He had a PhD from Stanford. And he taught, I used to say, Bob, you stir up, wherever you go, you stir up things. He taught in the American University in Beirut, and then it all kind of went poof. And then he went to Tehran, Iran, and he taught there at the university. Led a lot of people to Christ. There are a lot of Christians in Iran. You may not see them because the women may wear their black garb during the day. They walk through the front door of their house, that thing comes off, and they're running around in their cutoffs and whatever, and they're Christians. He went over there like three or four years ago when the Passion, remember when the Passion movie came out? He was visiting Christian friends, and they could lose their lives if they knew, they would probably be killed. But he was there. And they said, they were talking about the movie, The Passion. And the guy said, wait a minute. He ran down the street about 5 minutes to a market, Mercado, kind of an outdoor market, and came running back. And he said, here it is. It wasn't even out yet for us to buy. It was still in the movie theaters. But in Iran, in Tehran, they had the movie and a CD, on a DVD. And they were showing that behind the doors. So God is at work everywhere. Remember I said, God is at work everywhere. That's exciting. But he taught me a passion for global missions. Although I always grew up loving missions because my uncle was a missionary in Colombia. But he gave me a more of a pack because he always had these great stories. And, you know, I helped him raise money. And he mentored me. That's what he was doing. He was mentoring me. And that's what a mentor is. He's an encourager. I remember years ago, and he went to, right after the fall of Russia, he went over to Kiev, and he started standing in the bread line. He had to stand in the bread line with his wife for an hour and a half to get a hunk of bread, because it was really bad over there. But he was sharing Christ, and they, in the universities, would come and say, he'd come in and give a lecture, because he had a PhD. And they said, we don't want to hear students like you. Say, we don't want to hear it. Tell us about Jesus. And so he'd, for an hour, would give a whole lecture on salvation, and it was amazing. And out of that group came five young guys, came to Christ. And I remember he sent me an email, and he said, Gordon, I need you to raise me some money. He always did this. Gordon, I need you to raise me some money. And so I went out to my friends and I scrambled together the money, about $2,500, and we sent it over to him. And he was able to bring those five students out of Kiev to an InterVarsity training center or training course, a week long or whatever it was, 2 weeks, and train them in the Word of God. And they went back, and a year or two later, one of those guys became the head, one of the major heads of the government of the country. We'd never know who we're sharing. So he got me a global passion. And I talked about Opal women, Bob Williams. Opa means grandfather in Indonesian. Run and finish well. The other guy that taught me to take risks and believe anything is possible is old Buf Character when he was pastor at Northwest Church before he died. He taught me, and he took me around the world. He made things risky. But take a risk. Believe anything is possible. Just do it. Do it. And, you know, I have, in my real nature, I'm an introvert. But he taught me to be an extrovert. Just do it. You know, go out and believe the impossible. Come on, Donahoe, get out there. That's what he'd say. Donahoe, get out there. And so the final guy I just want to share before I close is Dr. Jim Westgate. Anybody know Dr. Jim Westgate? I talked to him often. He was just teaching our Bible study this morning. And I can bounce anything off of him, thoughts, decisions. And over the last 15 years, we have been very close. And he had never been overseas, never been out of this country. And I got him on a trip, and we went to Indonesia together. And then we started doing tours around the world. We went to Israel like 7 times on tours, Turkey and Greece, and doing a lot of things together. So, but he has a way about it that just, he's intellectual, but he's just practical. And we just have a great relationship of bouncing ideas and talking, and he really helps me. So we're always learning. I'm not too old to learn, and so I gotta, and I'm mentoring others. In fact, the truth is, every one of you in this room are mentoring somebody right now. Do you know that? If you're a Christian and they know you go to the well, you're mentoring because people are watching you and what you're doing. And what you model before them, they will say, well, I guess that's what Christians do. And so you are actually, your life is a mentoring life, even though you're not in a formal relationship. So that's extremely important to remember. So when you think you're going to do something, you probably just think twice, well, who's watching me and what am I doing? So I'm going to stop there. And next week we're going to take the role of a mentor and look at some more things from the scripture with Jesus and probably get this out. And Bob, I'll let you tell him when you want to put these out. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, I promise not to go past 9, but I do have some nuts and bolts that I need to share with everybody. Now, first of all, what's that?
Ideally, if you could wrap up in 10, 15 minutes.
Sure, no problem. Okay, I want you all to identify your mentor and just let that person know that they need to be available for you at least a couple of weeks after you come back. Ideally, you're going to want to meet with them twice for a time of prayer and just discussing some of the things you experienced while you were on your trip, and that they're going to pray for you while you're gone. They don't have to help you financially unless the Lord moves on them, but that is something you need to do, and you need to read your book. So I want everybody to read that book if you haven't. Finish the book, okay? It's very quick reading.
You guys could write this down, pens and paper.
Okay. Okay. Familiarize yourself with a plan of salvation. Please take one of the gospel tracts here. Get familiar with the verses, the questions that link the verses together. And you know what the most important question is in a person's life? If they don't know Christ, if you were to die tonight, do you know where you'd spend eternity? And we're going to learn how to say that in Spanish before we go. Okay? Si muriera hoy, ¿sabe dónde pasaría la eternidad? And it's really not very difficult to learn. It's something you'll be able to say to people. I call it the eternal question. So next week we're going to talk about that. And so be familiarize yourself with evangelism, with a type of evangelism. Okay? Let's say evangelistic track. Okay? Very good. You're going to be working primarily in evangelism when we're there. We're going to be doing like 3 days in Indian villages, and then we're going to have a couple of vans. We're going to be going into the mountainous areas. By the way, you'll need to have some fairly warm clothing for the night. The weather is very pleasant. It's not going to be hot, too hot. We may go down in some of the lower lands during the time that you're going to be with us and in Guatemala, and you may have some warm days. But you'll probably have very pleasant weather the whole time you're there and some cool evenings. That's good because we're not going to have too many mosquitoes and things like that. I want to talk to you a little bit about vaccinations. You don't have to have any special vaccinations, just the regular routine vaccinations, you know, your measles, mumps, and rubella. If you haven't had that, you need to make sure that you've had that. Tetanus, hepatitis A and B. I recommend hepatitis A and B. It's not absolutely necessary. By the way, if you go on the U.S. State Department website, you can go to Guatemala and get all kinds of information. I'm not going to waste time here telling you all those things. We will have your travel insurance. That's part of our travel package. And we'll have enough insurance on you that if something were to happen and we had the medevac you, don't get scared, we would be able to do that. Okay? We've never had to do that yet, and I don't believe we're going to with this group. But you will be in good hands. And so if anybody...
We have the information. I put that in the binder.
Great. Okay, great. All right. So we'll have the 3 days in Indian villages. Then we're going to have three more days in what they call Ladino villages, and those are part Indian, part Hispanic, thus the name Ladino instead of Latino, and a little different culture, very interesting, and you're going to have some opportunities to give your testimony. I want you guys to work on giving your testimony in 30 seconds. You say, I've never given my testimony in 30 seconds. You're going to have a lot of opportunities to give your testimony in 30 seconds to 1 minute. When you're facing somebody, you're talking to them, you might ask them the question, you might say, you know, I found out the answer to that question in certain time in my life, in 1979 or whenever it was, and I know that I'm going to go to heaven now, and it's changed my life. I want you to think about how you would tell somebody in 30 seconds what it means to be become a Christian, okay? So we'll have then we'll have 3 other days where we'll be back at our headquarters and at visiting other churches, works that we have of Christians in Action. By the way, we have 19 churches in Guatemala. These folks are really good church planters, and we're going to learn a lot from them. Everybody's got a passport. I think there's only like 2 or 3 of you that haven't received your passport as of yet. But has everybody applied for your passport? Okay? Very good. Visas, there's no problem with visas. We just go into Guatemala. They give us a 90-day visa without any questions, and it doesn't cost us a thing, so that's very good. When you go to Brazil, it costs you about $125 just to walk into the country. Packing, we'll talk about packing restrictions and so forth, but like was referred to, you're only going to have be able to take one suitcase. Don't make it real full. 45 pounds is a good weight. Don't go much beyond that. You don't want to go beyond 10, 12 pounds on a carry-on. Guatemala has great coffee, so if I think it's among the best, and I've seen a lot of coffee. Somebody had a question?
They actually sell some Guatemalan coffee here now.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Yeah. They have these little packages, like about 10 different kinds of coffee. I've never seen this in other countries, and there are all kinds of different packages, you know, these kinds you buy at the supermarket in $2 packages. There's like 10 of them for about $5, and it's every one of them is good, so... You want to bring some of that back. Imodium, you all want to take a little package of Imodium with you. That's very good. Okay. Now on the hepatitis A and B, you really don't have to have that, but it is recommended even here in the United States. Okay. Eating and drinking, we will not be drinking the water. I want you all to buy yourself one of those, you know, belts at At Walmart, they have a little bottle on it, you know, or something like that. That's great. As long as you have a water bottle and it's convenient for you, everybody take a water bottle, because we will be drinking. We will not be drinking the water that the Nationals will drink. And you know what? It's not going to make them sick, because they've got all the little enzymes in their bodies built up, you know. And you go down there and you get sick because you're not used to that. Okay. We don't want anybody getting sick. And if you do get sick, I don't want you blaming it on the water. No, no, we will have the water. We will get you a supply of water every day. That's not a problem. But I just want you all to have your own bottle, okay? Clothing, no real problems on clothing. Our people are not hung up on different types of clothing or anything. Just modest, you know, use your head.
Shorts?
Yeah, that in most cases that will be okay. I would like all the women to take a dress for services. They are Guatemalan people are conservative in their dress. Men, you don't have to wear a tie. Don't worry about that. I haven't worn a tie in 10 years, I don't think. Okay, crime. If you go on the U.S. State Department, you'll see that there's all kinds of crime in Guatemala. And I don't want to deceive you, there is crime in Guatemala, but there's also crime in Los Angeles and in New York and in Fresno. It's just a matter of where you go and when you go there and who you go with. Nobody goes anywhere alone, okay? And we're not going to expose you to any dangerous situations. And besides that, we have the angels of the Lord who encamp about those who fear him, right? Okay. Does anybody have any questions at this point? I've got so many things to share with you next week, but I just want to make sure that we all get the basic nuts and bolts here. It's going to be $2,100 for our trip, and I need to have a commitment from each one of you by Friday, because I need to give $100 per person, and for the most part, I'm not going to be able to get that back, okay? And so I want any of you to, any of your funds goes through the church here. It doesn't go to me. And I'll be talking with Andrew. So talk with Andrew. Make sure you give him $100 by Friday. Is anybody, if you have any problem with that, let me know.
Tomorrow Friday,
okay? If you have any problem with that, then we can work on that.
All we need is a firm commitment.
Yes.
We have that 100 per person, so don't worry about that.
Okay.
I just need to know if you're like, I still don't know.
Yeah.
That's a drop dead. So let me know tonight if
yep.
you're not in.
Yep.
So just, if there's like an issue, you're like, I don't think, we can talk after.
Okay.
So we have the 100 per person. Don't worry about that. Just let me know if there's like, you know, we had Jessica Martin. I don't know if you guys, she came to worship me. She's not going anymore. Because some schooling stuff, just conflict. So, you know, like for example that.
Now, good news. Okay, you only have to commit $100 by tomorrow. But if something should happen and you say next week, I can't go, we can get your $100 back, at least for two people. Beyond that, we can't get it back. They said for a group of 16, which we will be 16, they only allow us to, within a week, we can go. If something should happen, we can go back and give you $100 back. But don't count on it, okay? After that, it's non-refundable. And we have until our last date here, which is October 30th, to give 50%. I'm going to say 1050, okay? That's half of what everything that we're going to be putting in. And I'll run down a list of everything we're paying for, you know, our tickets and our insurance and this and that. Everything has a place, and we're doing it as economically as we can. But we're not going to be chintzy. We're going to go there, and we're going to have ministry, and we're going to be able to make a mark there in Guatemala. And so part of this is also your project fund. Okay, very good. So then the other 30% we'll have. On November 21st. So we have some time to get all this together. Well, I'm 50%. That's okay. $100 Friday, 50% by the October 30th, and then November 21st, the rest of it. Okay? Anybody have any questions?
She had a question.
Okay. We're clear? All right, folks. Thank you so much.
I got a few things.
logistics-wise for Tri-Tip Fundraiser. I know there's some questions. So how it works is you guys signed up. You're going to sell 20 minutes before the service, 20 minutes after. So the idea is that you're just going to sell tickets to people that come up. Over here, it's going to be at the iHub. There's the sign. You'll be under there. So on Sunday, just come to the table. Just go back behind here in ADAW. There's a tri-tip sign. Just go there. And 20 minutes before, 20 minutes after, people will just walk up. How we want to do it is just somebody walks up to Denise, she gets that sale. Then somebody comes up to Beth, they get the sale. Then to Katie. So it'll just go in order like that. You don't have to come to any of the services and sell tickets. If you need the funds and you want to come, you can come to every service. Maple Creek, North here, Fig Garden, Southeast, those are all launched now. So we got four locations. And what is that? How many service times? Seven service times? I don't know what it is, eight. So you're welcome to come to more than just one. So you guys already signed up for that. How the whole process works is in your packet, you have 20 tickets. You're just going to write the person's name, phone number, contact info. And that way you take the small part, give them the big one. You're not going to give out a ticket unless you get the cash. So don't give out tickets unless you get the cash. You're going to put those in the envelope after the 12th. So in 2 weeks after the 12th, you're going to give me that packet with all your tickets, all your filled out information. That way we know how many tri-tips to order. And I think that's it. On December 28th, just a note for you guys, we're going to have a send-off service. So we're going to be at the 9 o'clock service here. That's a Sunday, December 28th. We're going to go up. They're going to announce us. They're going to record that and show that at all the different services. So that's how, logistic-wise, we have to do it since we're a multi-site campus now. I sent out an email today with your total donations so far, or total monies. If you did not get that or want to know, I have that as well here, so you can ask me. Any logistics-wise?
Did you write down the time the service is in the packet?
Yes. And so you need to mark what time people are going to pick those up. So how it's going to work on the 18th, so we're going to sell this Sunday, next Sunday. They're actually picking it up on the 19th. And so you need to mark down what time they're going to come. So if they say they're going to come at 10 to 11, you need to circle that so they know, okay, bring back your ticket at 10 o'clock on Sunday the 19th and pick it up. So you need to mark down which one so we know for sure. All right, so we're going to be back here a week from today, 7 o'clock, and we'll dive into more of the mentoring and some more of the details. And so if you guys have any questions, I'll be here. You can ask any of these guys as well.